negativity or greed or possession or taking from others to gain for yourself, that you're going to feed that, you're going to experience that, and that's one side of yourself. And there's another side of yourself that is connected to all things, that is beyond your body, that is the creator, that is a manifestation of the infinite. And depending, and when you connect to this, it's through the silence. It's not through the noise. It's not through the words. And so this silent place that you go to is so important for you to connect with that side of yourself, because what happens is when you pass on, depending on which life you led, that will predetermine how you come back. And in this particular writing or way of believing, the Cherokee people believes that you come back. You know, you come back and to the earth again. And depending on how you lived your life before, you're gonna have a higher tendency to give in to whatever consciousness you fed before, and you're gonna have to fight even harder to get back to that place. And she said how if you give your energy to the negativity, into the focus of self, and to that dark road, that you're going to come back, and maybe the consciousness of the goodness will be the size of an acorn, she says. And then she says, if you live a life like that again and you come back, maybe that goodness will be the size of a pea. And you're going to have to work even that much harder. And eventually, you're going to come back and you're going to be the walking dead. And that's where you're walking around and you just have no choice, and you're a complete victim to your circumstances because of your perception of life. And she says, to the contrast of that, you could give your energy to the goodness, to the connection, to the self that is beyond yourself, to be in that silence, to connect with all your relatives here on earth, the sky, the trees, the animals, the birds, you know, everything. And you eventually can get to a point in her story here that you can remember your past lives, and you're able to pass on when you choose to pass on, and that you're able to heal the people and bring these teachings back because you chose to focus on that part of that is beyond yourself, that is connected to all things. And you know, this story, I think, plays very true to what we're talking about here, which is, you know, it's up to us ultimately. What are we going to choose to give our energy to? You know, and depending on those choices, we're going to create our experience. So
now, what I've come to the conclusion, I'm 63 years old and been through the ringer, been to the heights, been to the depths. And I've come to the conclusion that we are not here as human beings to transcend duality. But this is a playground, and every polarity represents a continuum. And along that continuum, for instance, love and hate. Along the continuum of love and hate is every possibility of those emotions, every blend, mm-hmm. every texture.
And I'm not quite sure what that show was. It was only a fragment, but hey, you sometimes get that on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, which is what you're listening to, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. For the next 2 hours, I and my co-host Christopher will be inviting you to call in to Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, which is a show concerned with civil rights. Let's find a few here in Santa Cruz. Stay tuned and call in 427-3772, 427-3772.
Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Victor Jara was a peasant who worked from a few years old. He sat upon his father's plow and watched the earth unfold. mother saying all night for them, with Victor by her side. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He grew up to be a fighter against the people's wrongs. He listened to their grief and joy and turned them into songs. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He sang about the copper miners and those who worked the land. He sang about the factory workers, and they knew he was their man. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He campaigned for Allende, working night and day. He sang, take hold of your brother's hand, the future begins today. His hands were gentle, generals seized Chile. They arrested Victor then. They caged him in a stadium with 5,000 frightened men. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Victor stood in the stadium, his voice was short his song. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. They broke the bones in both his hands, they beat him on the head, they tore him with electric shocks, and then they shot him dead. His hands were gentle, hands were strong. Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star, and he fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. His hands were gentle, hands were strong.
And that was Victor Jara, which is a another Broadside song. It was the title of the song is in memory, actually, in the substance of the song. It was by Arlo Guthrie, written by Adrian Mitchell, a Chilean singer and songwriter. Victor Jara was executed in 1973 in a Santiago football stadium where thousands of political prisoners were being held by soldiers of the Augusto Pinochet government. Jara was a strong enemy of fascism, one of the guiding forces of the Nueva Canción, the new song movement in South America. After the September Chilean coup, all musicians associated with Nueva Canción movement were declared subversive and many were arrested and tortured. The song comes from the poem Victor Jara of Chile, written by Adrian Mitchell, to which Arlo Guthrie added music. Hey there. Welcome to the show. And Christopher, welcome to the...
Good evening, Santa Cruz.
The mic, yes.
Am I on?
Yes.
You I can't hear myself though on the phone.
You can't hear yourself. Well, I can hear you all too well. I can tell you that right now.
I need to hear my own voice.
You might try
it's
these.
It's important to getting that deep, rich radio voice. You can't get it without proper
Here's some more phones. Try these phones. Earphones, that is. We're diddling around with our equipment here in the studio. I'm going to kind of be zipping ahead to try to get a lot of things done in the next 2 hours, which may mean if you want to call in, you'd better kind of zip it in, and I'll zip you in, and we'll
hey,
zip
on,
it up.
Call us up, man.
Yeah. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And I'm just going to run through a few stories, and then we're going to immediately launch into some of the interviews that I've been hoarding, or at least trying to play. I did a special show on Tuesday morning, which I hope to, I think I replayed it Tuesday afternoon. I'm going to try to download it onto a G-Stick and archive it later so we can actually, you can actually access it. You can access old shows, a lot of them, at www.huffsantacruz.org. And then you click on the name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and go to the date. Sometimes you can actually get the description of the show. We're working on expanding the descriptions. And tip of the hat to Valerie, Vision Song Valerie, for doing that. Christopher, welcome to the show again.
Yeah, thank you.
Mountain
Robert.
Man great. Chris, as you are calling yourself today.
It's good to be here in the control center of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And hey, you know, you know, support the station too, because this is your outreach. This is the only free voice, as far as I'm concerned, in the city of Santa Cruz. This
and
is
it's not free. We got to pay for it.
Well,
so
yeah.
Kick down, folks.
Yeah, give us a call. Support the station. Support the shows.
You can actually do that by going to freakradio.org, which is the website, and that's where you may go if you ever get the wherewithal to want to get
that's
a
right.
A
and tell your friends.
Yourself,
make sure to tell your friends. You know, tune in. You know, there's freakradio.org. I'm sure they've got a list of the shows
right,
and what's playing when.
Before we came in, you look a little tired today, Chris, but I know you actually gave me a brief description of something that made you even a little more tired downtown.
Yeah,
tell me a little bit about that. What happened to
you?
Well,
I told you, being a bum's a tough job. I mean, people think it's an easy life, man, but it's not. And it's a lot of work. You know, I'm dirty. I'm tired. I've been walking around all day trying to make a handful of dollars so I can get through. And I'm sitting at Starbucks, you know, just trying to get my thoughts together for this show, what I might want to talk about. And there was a group of ladies, I'm using that term loosely, not because of their economic status. They were very well-off ladies, but they were sitting next to me at a table, and one of them put a jacket on and said, "Oh, I don't like the way this jacket looks on me. Makes me look like a homeless bum." So this is, you know, from like 10 feet away, and I was like, wow. And I said, I resemble that remark, and she whipped around and glared at me. And I thought I was going to defuse the situation with humor until she glared at me, so I glared back, and I was like, whatever. You know,
but nobody evicted either.
I'm not the one who said something stupid.
Were you a paying
like that
customer, a homeless bum, hanging out in Starbucks?
Yeah, you know what I mean? And
which were you?
Well, you know.
Or is that a secret? We don't wish to hear it.
You've lost me.
In other words, were you a customer as well as she was?
Oh yeah, I get my coffee.
You even have your Starbucks.
I hate to admit it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of corporate America, but I got a Starbucks card, so I get a good deal. What can I tell you?
Well, I know Starbucks in Santa Cruz on Pacific was one of the only cafes. There were a couple that put up the pledge against discrimination against homeless people.
Well, you need to go back and talk to them then. Because the pledge is nowhere visible.
Right,
in the window.
Pledge is gone.
And second of all, they've instituted a number of policies recently that have not been necessarily, I mean, I would put them as anti-homeless policies, but like, well, I'll give you an example. One of them was with a Starbucks card, you basically buy one coffee in the morning, you pay cash, and then the refills are free all day long. And that's, you know, I don't know, anybody out there is a coffee drinker, I'll repeat, you know, if you buy one coffee in the morning and you have a registered Starbucks card, you get the rest of the refills
this
for the day.
This is based on what you've been told or what's been
written?
No,
this is what I did since I got here. I saved probably $500 in coffee doing that.
At least this was the policy of this one Starbucks.
This was just the way it was. If you've got a card.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
it's one of the benefits of having a card. I'm wondering if it's written down anywhere they hand
well,
it to you.
Well,
it is
a company policy, but the policy also states that it's per visit. And, mm-hmm. and what the people here in Santa Cruz were doing were basically writing a date at the top of the cup, and it wasn't per visit. You could just go all day. And they were sort of, in other words, they were being lenient or failing to interpret that part of corporate policy in such a way that was very homeless-friendly.
In fact, I heard the manager who originally did put up the pledge, and I saw it up there. It was up there for a while. The pledge that says this business does not discriminate against homeless people.
Well, anyway, they changed the policy.
I'm interrupting, but I want you to try keep your thought, because I just want to say that they put this pledge up. You know, we reserve the right to, you know, it's not the right to refuse service. The right, it's actually.
I hope that's not. I told the guys at Starbucks to tune in.
It said we believe people should have the right to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And of course, it's gone, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to break my word to you and let this caller interrupt.
No, please. We need all the callers we can get.
You got your Starbucks free coffee? Are you there?
Hey,
hello?
I was just checking on the number, man.
Hey, it works. You're okay, on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Free Santa Cruz, yeah, excellent. Well, I need it for the future reference. If I have something to say, I'll
call back. All right, we'll call back when you do. So there we have it. Good, I'm glad at least somebody's checking up. Stop, Christopher's cracking up here. So anyway, there you were talking to the well-dressed women who didn't like their own attire and then were offended because youth pointed out in a joking way that, you know, perhaps stating that they look like a homeless bum in a derogatory manner might somehow reflect on other people around them.
To the top of her lungs. And everybody
in
the
coffee
house turned and looked at me, not at them. I mean, and it was funny, so I just kind of laughed it off. I mean, I had no choice, and I was trying to be humorous about it.
You were revealing
She failed to see the humor completely in the situation. So
did you continue to enjoy your cup of coffee?
No, I figured it was time to come up here for the show.
So you actually kind of felt uncomfortable and left, or it just happened to happen?
I just was more disgusted than anything. I mean, disgusted with her reaction that she couldn't, laugh at herself enough to chuckle, and we could have all just know, sort of moved on in a peaceful way, as opposed to, you know, me moving on just hating yuppies
than I
hated
them
before
I sat
down.
So, yeah, give a call, 427-3772. The number does work. You don't have to try it to see if it works, but do try it if you got something to say.
Even if it's just hello. I mean, whatever. I mean, we're casual guys. You know?
Anyway, let's hear from the interviews from the street here. And Chris, if you have any comments, of course, let me know, and we will immediately stop and give you a 10-minute podium, or perhaps a 10-second podium, depending on my feelings.
Don't make promises you can't keep. Put the interviews on.
Here we go. That was Mickey Mouse. Actually, was it Donald Duck? I see what the problem is. Christopher has been monkeying with my tape recorder. This is a serious problem. I will have to thrash him. We'll be right back. That wasn't really dead air. That was paused air. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and here's some interviews. I think we're talking October 15th, October 16th. Today, of course, is the 22nd, so it's about a week ago, but I believe I'll give you a more exact fix on these tapes as we proceed.
And playing illegally on Friday, sunny, muggy Friday, around 20 to 1. It's some famous performers who've been here for many years and gotten a number of tickets. Jay and his associate.
Lonnie.
Illegal because it's in front of a sidebar cafe and near the directory sign. Talking here at the corner of Soquel and Pacific with
Vicki Atkins.
And Vicki, you yourself live outside.
Yes, I do.
And how long have you been outside?
Since 2 days before the first.
And what drove you outside?
I got thrown out by family members of the person that I was living with, and at night, and they threw away all my things and told me to get out. And I was scared, so I left.
How long were you living there?
About close to 10, 20 years. I don't know for sure. The year Costco's opened was the year I moved in.
And this was, were you paying rent, or were you simply, was it sort of a free deal for you?
Well, no, nothing free. I mean, I took care of the house. I took care of the dog. I took care of, it's a huge house, and it took a lot of work. And I was very restricted on what I was allowed to do and what I wouldn't. And, cleaning-wise. And he was a pack rat, so I had my hands full, you know, cleaning poop off the floor because he wouldn't let the dog go outside. The yard, the upkeep of the property and everything. And I did the best I could, but I was limited because he didn't like a lot of things done. And eventually the city caught up with him and told him, look, we're going to red tag the house if we just doesn't get cleaned up. And he got desperate. He was afraid he was going to lose his home, so he called his family in. And, you know, like I said, my hands were tied. It was his property. He called the shots on what I could do and what I couldn't and where I could go and what I
What was the final straw that broke the camel's back? Why do you think they bounced you, or he bounced?
Well, they never wanted me there, okay? They never wanted me there.
So his family decided they didn't want you there.
Right.
He liked having you there, but they didn't.
We always got along. I mean, I was at his beck and call for sexual favors and stuff. I mean, you know what I mean? And anything he wanted done, all he had to do was say so, and I was right there, Johnny on the spot.
Now, is this a consensual arrangement you had with him? And were you attracted to this guy as well?
Hell yeah. The sun rises and sets on him as far as I'm concerned. I'm just madly in love with him. I've always worshipped him. And
he kicked you out because his family forced him to?
He didn't kick me out. He wasn't even there when it happened. His family came in and to my bedroom and told me to get out right before dark, you know, and then I didn't have a leg to stand on. I was scared, you know. I didn't know what to do or what my rights were, or I didn't think it through even, you know.
You've been out for 3 weeks on the street now.
Well, 2 days before the first, so whatever that is.
And what kind of income have you got?
Just SSI.
And what's been happening on the streets? Have you been sleeping alone? Have you been with somebody else?
Well, I've been pretty lucky so far as finding campsites and stuff. When it was raining and stuff, I stayed over there at that Greek Orthodox church.
How did that go?
Well, at first, the people that were there, I slipped and fell, and I made a lot of noise, and they had me, they told me to go away, that I was making too much noise.
Now, when you say you made noise, why was that?
Because I fell. I slipped and fell on the steps of these slippery shoes. I don't have shoes that fit me.
So you
these
hurt
only
yourself.
Shoes. Yeah. And I was screaming for somebody to help me up because I thought I'd really, messed myself up. But they ran me off, and I went over to the library, and I stayed there until the winds came. After the rains, the winds came about 4
this week here.
Yeah. And,
but before that, were you sleeping at the church? Or were you
No, I won't go to the shelter or anything because of a real bad thing that happened to me years ago. So I think you have to sign up to go to the church or something at their shelter, and I won't go near the shelter.
Well, for the last few days, because of the rainstorm, they've let people in on an emergency basis.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't know.
The Holy Cross, or?
No, we're talking about the Homeless Service Center under the new manager, Doug Loisel. However, that was only for, I think, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night.
I won't go up there to River Street Shelter, you know. Well, something real bad happened to me years and years ago. That's what started my living over there, you know, at this man's house.
Talking about an assault of some kind?
Yeah, there was a rapist murderer dude named Mitch that had killed, I guess, 5 women or something like that. And I was his last victim.
And luckily you're still with us.
Yes, very, very, very lucky. I'm very fortunate. I talked my way out of it. And
what happened to him?
He's doing 400-something years or something like that at Pelican Bay or Beach or something, some big prison. Don't mind me.
No, go for it. Lighting up a cigarette here. You're under arrest for lighting up a cigarette. Actually, where we're smoking now is within... Well, actually, amen.
Yeah, they're fixing to cut off all smoking on the mall, I heard.
Anywhere within 20 feet of
a
business, and I think everywhere along Pacific Avenue as well.
Yeah, that will be 20 feet.
My vague understanding of it.
Maybe we should smoke down.
Have you heard? Now, you're okay at the moment, I think. It's not illegal right now, but... What's been happening recently on the streets that you've seen? You say, I mean, any assaults on women that you know about, concerned about?
The police stopped me yesterday evening and asked me if I had heard anything on the street about an assault that had taken place at the trailer park on Bay. And I hadn't heard anything, but I'm not.
Fairview Court assault, we're talking about the one that was in the paper? Or?
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know about the newspaper ad or anything until afterwards, but they asked me if I knew anything or heard anything, and I said no, you know, but, you know.
I don't.
I got some butts you can...
So, offering a butt, but butts are not butt enough. So, butt out, so to speak. So, what about police behavior? How have the police been treating you?
Well, you know, they play the good cop, bad cop routine. When I got hit by a hit-and-run driver over here in the parking lot, there were lots of witnesses, but I had a head injury, so I wandered off. And when they were called from Metro Security over here, they met me at the Greyhound, and one cop kept questioning, why were you sitting? What? It doesn't make sense. I didn't believe anything I said. And then the other cop was real nice, so I have never had a real problem with the police here, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. I I've been busted many times and shit, and I've been through a lot of tribe, caused a lot of trouble that brought onto myself. But I've never really had any problems with the police. They've been pretty good, you know.
But this incident with the hit and run driver, when did
this
happen?
What was that have been? Tuesday, Wednesday, Monday?
Today is Friday.
Okay, yeah, no, today's Thursday, isn't it?
No, today's Friday.
Today is Friday, you're right. I have to think back. Okay, it was I have all my paperwork and stuff in the hospital, but I'm not real sure. I had a serious head injury, so I'm not real sure what day. I think it was Tuesday. I'm pretty sure
this week with the rainstorm, because Tuesday was the rainstorm.
Okay, yeah, it would have been the same day. Yeah.
So what happened in this hit and run?
I was sitting right up here.
You're pointing down Soquel to the area toward back of New Leaf.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, baby. And this car had pulled into a parking spot right across from me, and I wasn't looking. Okay, I was sitting in a parking space, so I wasn't worried about being run over or hit or anything like
the
that. Or
parking lot in the back of New Leaf Market.
Right. And right on this island, right there.
You're pointing now as we're approaching the back of New Leaf, and you're pointing to...
right where that Volkswagen is. I was sitting right there on that side of
the island, right as you come in directly to the left on the entrance from Soquel.
And he was, I guess, parked right there or something where that car is, and he backed up. And when he backed up, he straddled with his tires over this island, and I was sitting on the island.
And where did he hit you?
I was sitting right here, and... I didn't see him coming because I'm facing this way. And all of a sudden, I look up, and out of the corner of my eye, I thought I saw some taillights or something, you know, reverse lights, I guess is what it was.
Right.
And I'm sitting right here.
And you're sitting down out of demonstrate on this island, which is directly back at the back entrance of New Leaf Community Market.
And he backed up, and he just kept coming. And these people were honking at him and screaming at him to stop. And, he just kept coming until he knocked me down, and next thing I knew, I was up underneath the car, and I'm pounding on the bottom of the car, trying to, you know, get his attention. And then he figured out what he'd done. He sped off around that way.
What kind of a car was he driving?
I saw the underneath.
Were any witnesses to this?
Yeah, lots of witnesses, but I was so I was like out of
concussion.
It. I just kind of ran off. I kind of wandered off, and it wasn't until I got to Metro that I went, wait a minute, I think somebody just ran me down,
you
know?
Want to give your full name for free radio? You don't have to if you don't
want to. Right, I want to, yes. Vicki Adkins.
Spell the last name.
A-D as in dog, K-I-N-S.
And what police officer did you report this to?
I don't know. Yeah. It was two police officers that came and met me behind Greyhound. And I don't know if they did any follow-up or not. I checked with New Leaf already to see if maybe anybody was an employee or something.
If any witnesses want to contact you, how can they reach you?
Leave a message on my voicemail box. It's 831-457-9754, extension 2574.
This happened Tuesday about what time?
2:00.
And we're talking back in New Leaf Market. In the middle of the rainstorm, or?
No, the rainstorm hadn't hit. This was during the daylight. It was during the day.
Okay, because I think it was raining all Tuesday.
Okay, then it must have been Monday, because it was before the rains came. That night, the rains hit.
So it must have been Monday, probably, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think the rains were going all day.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, so that's the number to call if you were a witness to this.
Please.
Any other comments you want to make for free radio?
Only that I didn't, I mean, I've been homeless on and off all my life, but I didn't realize just how hard it can be. You know, I mean, I did, but I was young before, and it was easier. And now it's really hard to find a safe place, you know, without getting raped or beaten.
Have you been assaulted yourself while on the street in the last few weeks?
Nothing major, nothing I couldn't handle, but
it was a strain.
It was, yeah, because, like, when I was camped out under the culvert over there by 7-Eleven, by Swift and Mission, and these guys would, like, come down there late at night, and they'd throw bones and stuff so that the animals would attack, you know? Yeah, like chicken bones, rib bones, stuff like that, you know, leftover meat bones and stuff, and they'd throw it at my camp, and, you know, they just didn't want me there, but they could have said so instead of being so nice and then turning around and throwing bones and stuff like that. So
you don't think they're just disposing of trash?
No. They knew where I was, and they even announced, oh, here, hold on to this, because the coons and animals and stuff are attacking my camp. Here, hold on to this and toss it to me in the dark at a culvert, you know, late at night. You know, it's like, it was obvious, you know, and bones flying all over the place, and in the dark, I can't see them to pick them up. you know, since a lot of the homeless are mean to each other. I tried to camp on that Greek Orthodox Church park porch the other night when the rains came, and these people ran me off because they said I was making too much noise.
Because you hurt yourself.
Right. And so I went across the street to the library, but you know what's funny is that karma takes over there, and it was like about 4 o'clock in the morning when the winds hit, I went back over to the porch. I'm like, they can't run me off. I got as much right as they do there, and they got rained out about 30 minutes later. They were soaking wet, and I was dry as a bone until about 9 o'clock.
How'd you do last night?
Last night was tough. Last night was hard, but I got through it. You know, we just had a short little rain, you know, and it didn't, the fog was real thick, which made it real wet, but I slept under the trellis over there, you know. By
alone or in company?
Actually, there was somebody I knew right there, too. He's the one who showed it to me. And he had a sleeping bag and another little blanket, and he shared with me, gave me a little blanket. I didn't want to sleep too close to him because I didn't know how long he'd been without, you know. So, you know, I didn't want to start.
Well, you're an attractive woman. You're...
Thank you. I don't think so anymore. I don't have any teeth or anything.
You don't need teeth to be attractive.
Thank you.
It's more a matter of what you put out in terms of your persona. But
well, I try to be as good to others as I want them to be to me. You know, not necessarily as they are, or not necessarily as I expect them to be or anything. Just try to put out as positive attitude as I can. And I know I get frustrated, irritated, aggravated, and I take it out on all the wrong people. But I try to keep a positive attitude if I can, you know.
We've been talking with?
Vicki Atkins.
Thanks, Vicki. You say there have been used to be a lot more places to camp?
Yeah, you used to be able to camp along the river and stuff, you know, and get out of get off the beaten path and out of people's eyesight, so you were like a open target. Now you can't go down by the river. They've all cut it all down. You can't go down by the trellises too much. They cut all that down. And
library foliage has been cut back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's just like everything is like they cut everything down like they're literally trying to run the homeless off. Where is a homeless person to go? You know, I mean, you're homeless. You have nowhere to go anyway. That's why you're there. And then to make that inaccessible is just cruel. It's cruel and unusual punishment. It's just, it's unbelievable. It's like have some kind of heart, have some kind of concern with state. We're not out here like trying to camp in people's houses or camp in their driveways or anything, but at this point I'm looking at driveways to camp in, you know, because I'm desperate. I need some place to freaking stay, to lay my head where I feel safe. And there's nothing, you know. We can't get out of sight, and if you're in sight, you're a target. You know, the guy laying down over here the other night, he was laying there, and I watched these kids come up, and just young punks, college kids, I guess, and they just started kicking him and stuff, you know, and he wouldn't do anything to anybody.
When was this again?
I don't know for sure. It was last weekend, I guess.
And did they say anything? How far away from this were you?
I was under that little, I was in that doorway right there behind the thrift store.
Yeah, you're pointing to the back of the thrift store from Front Street.
I was right there, inside there.
And these college kids started kicking this?
Yeah, they started kicking him and stuff, and it was like, it wasn't like they knew his name or anything. They weren't hollering a name. They were just being, you fucking bum, and shit like that, and kicking him and stuff. And there was no call for that. And he just curled up in a ball to protect himself. And I could tell he's, like, not all there, you know. And it's like, it was just so freaking senseless. It made no sense whatsoever. And then they just wandered off laughing and stuff, all drunk. And it was like he was just, you know, curled up in a ball, scared to move. And
how many were there?
I don't know. Maybe 4. I'm not sure.
You weren't about to jump up and say,
oh,
hey,
hell no. I mean, don't get me wrong. I will come to somebody's protection if I think I could stand a chance of helping or at least distracting them. But I had nowhere to run to. You know, I'm trapped in a corner doorway there. I'm not going to put my stuff, you know, I'm not going to give them more, you know, ground to beat or somebody. I didn't want to be their next victim. You know,
yeah,
now normally I will jump to somebody's aid if I can, but not in that situation. They were just being
somewhat isolated back here, too. If it's in the middle of the night, too.
Yeah, but don't advertise that, because next thing you know.
Yeah, that's a situation here with Vicki, who has given us a long report. What do you think, Chris? Any comments on this? We've heard her talk about loss of campgrounds, violence against the homeless, police not responding properly to hit and run involving her, and getting thrown out of her, you know, her caretaking job, which she's had for a long time. Any reaction to any of that? Any thoughts?
Sounds pretty standard stuff. I mean, that's the streets of Santa Cruz, and that's, you know, apparently the kind of community that these folks want. They've been continuously electing the same stupid ding-dongs to the city council and the whole, you know, the whole smear.
Hey, I like ding-dongs. I don't want you to assault my favorite candy.
Apparently, this is what the community, this is the way they want their community. I mean, this is the way they want the resources allocated. They want the police down there harassing homeless people during the day trying to beg instead of, you know, maybe being on an anti-gang task force and, you know, catching some of these gangsters before they stab their children. I mean, I guess, you know, I guess they like burying honor students. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, now all of a sudden the police are very busy and they have no time for us. Imagine that. You know, they got a 16-year-old dead in the morgue.
So you've been on the sidewalk in front of the Gap for the last few days.
Sure, yeah.
Selling street spirit and panhandling.
Yeah, begging. Begging alms, I prefer. That's
alms for the Chris.
Yes, alms for the Chris.
But it's been slow.
It's a holy duty. I'm allowing people to convert their bad karma into good. I think of myself as a karma bank, that's all.
Or a karma conversion machine.
That's right.
Maybe a recycling...
KTM. Come to the Chris KTM, man. Make your deposit and get some good karma.
And get the new edition of Street Spirit.
Which
we have. How's that been going?
We have, yeah. Well, it's actually a lot more people are starting to pick one up. That's very exciting, actually, to see that people are actually even vaguely interested, especially, to be honest with you, the most popular issue has been the one on the hate crimes against homeless people. And
probably give you some
a lot of people were quite shocked. I mean, you would be surprised the number of people who came up, truly genteel, very well-off people who were shocked by that issue and you know, paid quite a few number of dollars extra as a tip to get that issue and spent quite a bit of time with me, you know, thinking, wow, I just, you know, they live in such a bubble world and the mainstream media so completely censors and strips anything that would be in our favor out of the news that these kinds of stories like this Vicky was talking about here on the streets and the kinds of things we discuss on the show just, you know, are never going to see the light of day except for somebody like me sitting there interesting them. And you see now I hold them up, too. I try to make them a little bit prominent so people get the idea that, hey, check this out, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm hoping people will check them out and because you're actually one of the few vendors of Street Spirit. I guess the new issue should be coming out in a couple of weeks, the November issue, and we've been getting it lately, but hopefully that'll change. I'm going to run through a few other stories, which I haven't had time to run through, that I picked up off the Internet, and feel free to comment at any point,
sure,
Chris.
Sure, of course.
Tulare County tent city to be dismantled. This is a story that's a couple weeks old. It's from Visalia, California. More than 200 homeless people will be relocated.
That rings a bell.
Moved along, you fucking bums, as Visalia officials dismantle an encampment along the St. Johns River. Visalia is a town in Southern California, kind of middle Southern California. As you take 101 south, I think you can, if you go slightly toward Bakersfield, you'll find Visalia off of 101, if I'm not mistaken, about parallel to Paso Robles or thereabouts.
Wow, that's it's godforsaken desert town
down
there, man.
It's kind of in the desert area. Yeah.
Jiminy crickets.
Yeah. Residents of neighboring properties have complained as the encampment has grown over the last year because of the recession. There's no water at the site and no garbage pickup. I wonder how hard would that be to bring some water and garbage pickups? Probably not. You know, I mean, we tried to do that for the homeless when there was a Coral Street open air shelter in 95 and 94 and 95. The back 40.
The good old back
Citizens
40.
Committee for the Homeless allowed two porta potties back there for I think it was 150, 200 people. Karen Gillette of the Homeless Services Center wouldn't open the bathrooms during the day, and that's one thing I want to say about Doug Loisel, who has been fired as executive director of the Homeless Services Center. He made some substantive changes without going to his board, though he got the approval of his board after he did it. I mean, nobody complained. Without begging the city council, without, you know, a referendum and a vote by, you know, the entire world, he said, open the bathrooms 24 hours a day to anyone who needs it. Open the homeless service center during
Man,
the day.
It's beyond money. It's so desperate at this point. It's such a catastrophe out there at this point that it's beyond money. I don't, you know, it's all we hear about from these council guys is, you know, well, we spend the most money of this and that, which as we've discussed is not true. But the fact of the matter is they can keep their stinking money. Just leave us the hell alone. We'll feed each other. Just repeal these hideous, anti-homeless laws, the sleeping ban. You know, the various panhandling, the layer upon layer upon layer of regulation of the panhandling and the street performance, repeal all, the camping ban, repeal it all. And guess what? We'll feed each other. Give us a place in the park, man. We'll run our own meal. We'll run a rainbow kitchen.
The point I'm making here about this Tulare County thing is that there were no trash pickups and no garbage pickups. And the same thing was happening in Santa Cruz to a lesser extent, but to a significant extent. They were trying to be cheap about it, or they were just trying to ignore it or pretend it didn't happen. And the same thing happened with Camp Paradise. Camp Paradise in 2000, which was the homeless run encampment by Larry Templeton under the Highway 1 bridge area.
You were talking about that before.
Yeah, it went on between mostly, its height was between June and December of 2001, and then it was kind of washed away by the river.
Was it actually used? I mean, did people go out there?
Not only did people go out there, but the homeless service centers sent people there because they had no place for people in the what was called then the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the summer program. And Templeton, you know, said, he'd take your tent, go over there, set it up. Templeton was a combination of activist, charlatan, and bully, as well as being a guy who really had some genuine concerns about people. I mean, I add a lot of these qualifiers because I saw all different aspects of him. And
I don't know when this fellow got fired or whatever, but the policy as of the last rainstorm that we just had on Tuesday was that Coral Street was allowing people to
only
roll out.
Because he declared it for the first time in 15 years.
Yeah.
Well, it might have been the first or second, but it was not something that was normally done under Ken Cole.
Of course not, and he can't be doing that. Yeah. I mean, by the rules, he could, you know, I mean...
Well, he could be doing
well,
it.
Well, he should be doing it, but what I'm saying, you know what I'm getting at, though. He can't, you know, he did do it.
Well, you
know,
I mean, I think the fact that you respond to an emergency, and, you know, I think that,
well, that's what
he appropriately did, and I think that, I don't think he was fired because he did that kind of stuff. In fact, the board of directors and the homeless folks who benefited and the members of the community, I think, commended him for that, and also for such things as, although he initially put this 50 cents on the meal, he also he quickly removed it when he could, and there was no 50 cent meal when he was being fired. I believe that had been removed.
Yeah, donation
because
of
donations.
Was made,
maybe it was his clever way of prompting, you know, donations from people as the weather gets colder. I don't know. I don't think it was a good idea to, and I criticized him for that. But he also brought to us the concerns about the beating of Tom Preston, as alleged by Preston himself. He was concerned enough to come on the air, and he set up this homeless 300-person picnic that happened last week before he was kicked out last Friday, where the community got together at Harvey West. I mean, these are, I don't place much stock in these little token events, but if you begin to add them up, you begin to see a change, then you notice it, and I'm really sad to see these headlines about board fires embattled center director and. In the Sentinel of yesterday, board will perform checks on all workers today. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't perform checks on workers, and I'm not saying that Loisel didn't make a mistake, for sure, although he's probably looking for employment and not revealing that he had a pending case for, you know, this. Allegedly, we don't have the details. I haven't contacted the L.A. police or the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. He has a court date he has to go to. He hasn't been convicted of anything, but he's accused of a sting operation involving someone he was corresponding with online that the police then said, go get him to get a hotel room, get him to buy you liquor, and then we'll arrest him. Well, according to this, she was 12 years old. That's certainly too young for me to even think about, and it sounds like it's victimizing young women. Young women isn't. She's a young woman. She's
well,
a child.
Well, you know,
so.
There's some huge questions. You know, for me, I mean, there are families up there. There are kids up there. I mean,
for sure.
You know,
but did he ever do anything?
It's a position he shouldn't have been in, and whether or not he was good at the job or not, I think it's irrelevant until that's settled. To be honest with you, I mean, it's not hard to find people that can run that thing up there.
Well, they haven't been able to so far. I'll tell you, he's the best one so far. And frankly, I'm interested in seeing. I judge a person by their present behavior and the fact that there's an incident. I know it scares away donors. I know it makes for headlines. I know everybody can rant and rave about it. But if you consider, have there been any complaints about abusive behavior by any people in Santa Cruz?
No, of course. You know,
I mean, that's the point
to
me.
You know, but still, I don't know. I've got questions. I got questions and no answers on that. So I guess we just have to wait that
one
out.
Continuing with the Tulare County Tent City story, which I wanted to finish up. Again, this is they dumped 200 homeless people down there 2 weeks ago out of a tent city. That these are people that are not only, you know, the homeless-looking people that the ladies in Starbucks may be complaining about, but ordinary individuals who've lost their homes previously, not houseless, who because of the, massive expenditures going into the wars and occupations in Afghanistan and Iraq and the huge bailouts to the banks and the flight of capital abroad and the way
actually,
that's working.
Your homeless encampments tend to break down with a heavy demographic of veterans, too, as well. I mean, because they've already...
Right.
I mean, they're
but
used
I'm
to bivouacking,
that, I'm saying,
you know what I mean?
I'm saying that these are people who,
you know, they're more respectable. In the eyes of the Red Cross, they would be the people that would get the first treatment because they're more recently homeless. Whereas you're not some long... Although, interestingly enough, they've adopted a new policy nationally because they don't want to deal with the real issue of homelessness. They're saying it's all a matter of drug abuse, alcohol abuse, mental illness, you know, or...
Well, that's a good part of it.
Antisocial behavior. I think it has to do with displaced urban residents is what I think is the primary thing about homelessness. There's inadequate housing is the reason that people are homeless.
I think it's such a diverse group of people that there's no way that you can come up with any sort of a unified approach or solution. I mean, I think attacking each demographic, the mentally ill is one demographic, transient travelers and their needs are another demographic.
They all share one thing in common.
Kids
they
that are coming over the
they have one thing
San
in common,
Jose
Christopher,
who just want to stay the weekend.
They have one thing in common. They don't have housing.
Right.
And there's no and there's housing that exists that,
so
will,
the criminalization
that will not be allowed.
The, you know, the public behavior.
So they need housing.
I see, is
that's why I call
step,
them
you know?
Displaced urban residents.
I mean, things like the sleeping ban and stuff like that, that universally affect everybody who's in those categories. But, I mean, if you want to dig deeper into the social issues and solve those, solve the bigger problem, once you decriminalize...
Housing.
Public behaviors.
Housing. Housing.
Then you,
is, I think
well,
the issue,
you do it by demographic
homeless,
by demographic.
They don't have
you
housing.
Study each demographic.
There ain't
their
no
needs
housing.
Are.
I keep mm-hmm. repeating, and you know, you keep with your thoughts, too.
Yeah,
but,
well, yeah, but yeah. I'm saying, you know, housing is different things to different people. Housing to a person who is traveling from San Francisco to Monterey and doesn't want to be here more than a day or two is an outdoor hostel. Okay, housing for a mentally ill person who was born and raised here and went bonkers here and is now on our streets down on the avenue, that's a different kind of housing. Let's get him an apartment. See, so it's if we attack the various groups of these of people who...
I don't think most of the homeless are travelers. I think most homeless people
are people...
Oh, I think
you're wrong.
Well, Nate, that's interesting. I mean, maybe we need to get some sort of stats on it. I'm not sure where I go for that. But I'm going to finish this Tulare County, Tent
right.
City story, just for the heck of it. Again, this is down in Visalia, California. Officials say some of the residents have lost jobs or their homes, while others have substance or mental health issues. At a Tulare County Supervisors meeting Tuesday, some neighbors said they're concerned for their safety. Supervisors decided to survey the Tent City residents next week. I guess I haven't seen a follow-up story. I'll take a look to see who's there and what services they need. Hardy, har, har. That's what they always do when they want to run you off. They talk about the services they're going to be providing you because... The media spotlight is on this.
Oh, and you got to love how they throw around the word relocation.
Right.
But where did they relocate them to? Please
somewhere
find
else.
That somewhere.
Down the road. Yeah.
Relocated them across the street to the sidewalk and pointed to the county line. You know?
Right, and, you know, sent the police after them. Officials say they plan to shut down the camp by mid-November, so actually maybe they have a little more time. And I don't know if...
Remind us all what town this is in again.
This is Visalia in Tulare County, Southern California.
Right,
so.
So
and I'm wondering if there's any updates on this story. Let's take a look. Tulare County homeless. I'll do a
well, you know, so another check, another Tent City bites the dust. I mean,
yeah. no, just that one story from October 9th, and that's in the San Jose Mercury News. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org.
Give us a call.
Give us a call. Chattering at each other and overriding each other every now and then. Or Christopher and Robert here.
Well, disagreement is a spice of life.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes I'm right and you're wrong. Let's keep that in mind.
I'll let you know when that happens. I'll send you a memo.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Here we go.
I am asking everything you have to give. I am asking everything you have to give. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. We will never give in. You will lose your youth, your sleep, your arches, your strength, your patience, your sense of humor, and occasionally the love and support of people you love very much. But we will never give up. We will never give up. We will never give in. 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 In reality.
that was Kristen Lems. Actually, seeing her picture here for the first time, I loved her stuff 20 years ago when I got it, the albums. She was a feminist who wrote a lot in the 70s and 80s. This is a song we will never give up. It was recorded June 1982, and she's a folk singer. She was still alive, still productive, I think about 10 years ago. She wrote me when I requested some of her stuff. She rallied for the ERA. Maybe people may remember the Equal Rights Amendment that died in 1982, but three states short, I think, of a passage ratification. Safe Energy, Peace, Civil Rights, and Other Causes, founded the National Women's Festival in 1974, and got a lot of good songs, which I played in past shows. How you doing over there, Chris?
I'm doing good. I like the music selection in this show.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Our music selection has sometimes been criticized.
By who?
Well, numerous people. 101.1 FM, WWE.
Call us up if you don't like the music and tell us why.
Or if you want to hear more of the same,
yeah,
and you
exactly.
do like it, www.freakradio.org. Here's some more street interviews, and then I'm going to do another one of the stories from the Internet. So here we go.
Well, here we are in the New Leaf parking lot, and it's about 1 o'clock, talking with
Mad Mike, the Wonder Dog.
And Mad Mike, you are newly in town after a program in San Jose, and what's the story? You think you have problems with the police?
Yeah, well, before the storm came, they was going around raiding everybody's camps and stuff like that, evicting them and stuff like that, and that might have been just them doing that before the winter sets in just to evict everybody, but now the storm hit, they might ease up on everybody. I don't know. I'm just hiding like a little rat. You know, even a rat has a hole to go to, but if you're homeless in Santa Cruz, you know, you don't have a place to lay your head and sleep is a crime in this fucking one-horse town, and this town needs an enema.
So let me ask you, Mad Mike, when was the last time you were in town?
I haven't been back here since August of 2008, and I heard some horror stories. It got progressively worse. They're cracking down on people camping and homeless and going through their shit. And
this is based on what you've heard and what you've seen,
what I heard from different people. People are homeless now that I'm back in town. I've been back since September 23rd. I did a 6-month program at Salvation Army. I'm clean and sober.
Here come your friends, the police.
Yeah, here come my friends, the pigs. They're like flyers. They eat shit and bother people. You know, that's what the cops are like.
Right.
You know? So I don't know what the fuck he's doing.
He's probably checking out a report of some kind. Looks like Officer Warren, who's parked his car in the parking lot of the New Leaf marking. Actually, he's blocking one of the lanes, as police often do, but perhaps answering some kind of a report. Well, let's go take a look. Here's another police officer. I'll talk to you later then, Mike.
I look good, but why are you doing it?
Because I'm waiting to see what you're doing here in the parking lot.
Okay. I'm checking on that car.
Oh, well, check. Feel free. I mean, you know, it's parked in a public place. I have no objection.
I would be really bugged, though, if you were leaning on my car. That was my car.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're not bugged because these cars are here, and they have no special privileges as far as I'm concerned. If I'm not injuring the vehicle, I don't really give a damn if someone leans on my car or if I lean on their car. So we disagree on that issue.
You're bitter to this.
Well, you know, look at you. You're an armed officer, and you're asking me if I'm leaning on a car with the inference that I somehow shouldn't be doing so. You know, I mean, that is a kind of form of intimidation, and it's kind of annoying. So that's why I may sound annoyed, officer.
Fair enough. Hi, take it easy.
You take care, officer.
We've parked a couple weeks.
So what are you here for? Why stopping here? What's this car got to do with anything?
We call records to get that information.
So you refuse to say, is that correct? Okay. That's fine. Thank you for the public information, for letting us know what you're doing in the community. I appreciate that. That was sarcasm, folks. So, that last incident with Officer Warren, it sort of illustrates a point. Perhaps the point was made by our dialogue, and perhaps I'll make the point on the radio show later that you're now hearing, and I hope I'm not repeating myself, but officers' commentary to citizens is police officers have to be cautious in the kinds of things they say lest they be interpreted as commands or taken as intimidating statements with an implied punishment attached, because it's
not so hard to imagine that that is in fact what is being said when officers make comments to individuals on the street that are not specifically orders, but that are inquiries that seem to seek an answer or seek to demand an answer.
That's a little muddled. What I'm trying to say here is that the officer said to me, why are you leaning on that car? And I think, you know, most people would sort of leap back and, you know, act as if they were doing something wrong and so forth.
Robert, I got to give you credit. I'm just tickled pink, first of all, that happened to my absolute favorite police officer on the entire Santa Cruz Police Department, police force. That was a beautiful... interaction with our community police force and Officer Warren. It couldn't happen to a better guy. I hope you tuned in tonight, Officer Warren. You know, in fact, if you're tuned in, Officer Warren, I encourage you to call us up.
Yeah, they never do. But the point is, I think that, A, he didn't want to say what he was doing there, and he could have. In fact, he acknowledged it was public information because I can go find out by checking the 911 tapes. It's public. But he doesn't want to say. He maintains its mantle of secrecy. Where, you know, this allows sort of, he can dole out this privileged information to those who he wants to, say, put in an elevated position, maybe informants, maybe people who are, you know, more cooperative in helping him to proceed with his own agenda, which, you know, seems to be getting people to behave in a certain way. I mean, he says he'd be upset if I leaned against his car. Well, I probably should have gone over and leaned against his police car and said, well, you know.
Oh, that's got to be against the law,
I don't
huh?
think so. No, really? I mean, you know, no, I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't think I'm so. Not, you I'm sound not, like you've researched
I'm not,
this
I'm not, No, I haven't. But, I mean, I would imagine, as I said before, you're not injuring the car. There's nothing wrong with leaning against the car.
I agreed with you in
now,
every
course,
aspect
that
you
sure,
handled
you know,
it excellently.
And the point is to demystify these guys and these women who are paid by us, presumably, to deal with public safety issues like stabbings, you know, and like... You know, but real potential threats like help when traffic problems come up.
Well, they're obviously
driving.
So gung-ho to practice law enforcement. So fine, I you know, if I spent all that time and money getting through the police academy, I'd be gung-ho to go practice law enforcement too. So go practice it. My point is just let's allocate resources wisely. Go practice it where it can do the most use. And apparently, after you know, with honor students turning up dead and stabbed in downtown. Maybe it's time to reallocate.
We'll see how it goes.
Halloween's coming.
I think it's appropriate to say, you know, it's interesting you made the point that there seems to be less harassment. I've heard this from other people of homeless
kind of
people
busy.
Because the police are busy with stabbings. Does this mean we should sort of institute a stabbing campaign?
No, but all I've heard is the word gangs, Robert, since I've been back in town. Gangs this. It's like the boogie monster that gets blamed for every possible crime in the city.
Right, that's a problem, too. I see, while it's appropriate to say...
So go fight these invisible gangs.
While it's appropriate, that's like the war on terror or the war on drugs. You don't want to build up a phony menace. They're going to be... There was a rape on the west side, what we haven't heard about is... What about these guys who were kicking the homeless guy that Vicki Atkins talked about? What about the police officers who supposedly beat up Tom Preston on two occasions and then beat up a woman named Wanda, according to the reports by a man named John and a woman named Connie, which I played last time? We're getting reports of violence that the police should really be investigating if they're really concerned with, let's say, dealing with violence, even if it's violence by individuals in their own force. But as far as I know, maybe it's happening, maybe it isn't. I'm not aware that it's happening. And, of course, the news media isn't covering it.
Well, a direct quote from a police officer on that issue, you know, they don't report it. There's nothing we can do.
Uh-huh.
So that was that, and that's right out of an officer's mouth.
It's being reported here, folks, so let's not forget that.
I'm just saying, there's reasons. It's not like they're the most, you know, it's not like it's the first thought in my mind when I'm accosted, which I'm accosted on a fairly regular basis myself.
That's accosted, Mr. Questionable Pronunciation Guy.
You know, what are you, the English cops or what, man? I hate cops, man. I'm pathologically anti-authoritarian. I'll say it my way, man.
Say it your way.
That's right.
Anyway, in Oregon, there's an 8-year anti-war protest in Corvallis that I'd run this by you.
Say that a little slower, please.
The day the Afghanistan war began in 2001, several dozen people held a candlelight vigil in Corvallis, Oregon. Every afternoon since, the protest has continued. Every afternoon, wow. It started the way things do in a small town. It was the autumn of 2001. New York's World Trade Center had been attacked. There was talk of the U.S. military invading Afghanistan. And people here were calling one another, huddling over chamomile tea at the Sunnyside Up coffee shop, asking, what could anybody do? Some of the professors over at Oregon State organized seminars to explain who the players were. They talked about the histories of Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran. They brought in experts on Muslim fundamentalism, and they made it quite clear there was not a clear connection between Islam and terrorism, said Mike Bellstein, a city council member and retired chemist. On October 7th, the day after bombs began falling on Kabul and Jalalabad, that's the passive tense, the U.S. started dropping bombs on Kabul and Jalalabad. Several dozen people got together and held a candlelight vigil against the war in Afghanistan. The next day, Bellstein stood with an anti-war sign outside the Benton County Courthouse. Two other people showed up with signs of their own. The next day, more protesters came. Since then, a war has started in Iraq, a new president has been installed in the White House, and the Taliban has been beaten back only to regroup. Yet in Corvallis, they're still saying no to the war in Afghanistan. They have been there 7 days a week, 365 days a year, between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. since that autumn day in 2001. Some days we have 100. There's never been just one. Usually it ends up with at least five or six people by 6 p.m., said Ed Epley, 72, a retired phone company worker who has been the mainstay of the vigil over the years. He donates most of his afternoons to the cause and uses his 1961 Volkswagen van to transport banners and signs back and forth to the sidewalk protest site. Drivers often honk in support as they pass by. They drop off cookies or ice cream bars or, as on one recent day, gas money for the VW. Sometimes people park and pick up a sign or a flag. Other times, insults or worse are hurled out of car windows. Disgusting things like cups with human sputum, said Carol Alexander, 63, a longtime environmental activist who has often joined the vigil. We had ice cream thrown at us, hamburgers, Epley said. We had a rash of moonings for a while, Alexander added. By and large, however, the response has been positive, the protesters said. It's because we're united. I think 80% of Americans now think it's a bad idea to be in Afghanistan and Corvallis. It might be 95%, Bellstein said. There have been counter-protesters who set up against across the street or on the other end of the block, usually waving American flags and signs about supporting the troops. Cars sometimes roar past playing Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA at full volume. Some college students spent one afternoon waving honk if you hate hippies signs.
I'm sorry.
Lou Copes, a retired insurance agent, said she and her fellow counter-protesters try not to get into it with the peace vigil supporters. A couple weeks ago, one of these guys had some kind of bubble thing, and he was blowing bubbles in my face, she said. They're very argumentative, added Betty Robidart, a retired school bus driver. The point is not to be for or against...
Disagreeable bubble blowers.
Yes, indeed. The point is not to be for or against the war, counter-protesters said. It's to support the men and women who are fighting it. That is, say, killing Afghanis, men, women, and children over there in the name of the Karzai government that just had the most corrupt election in some time. Corrupt even for Afghanistan, although I'm not sure.
And yeah, there was an awful lot of votes thrown one. Out.
Yet they come home and they get these lukewarm responses from people. On October 7th, at the war's 8th anniversary, as President Obama mulled the possibility of dispatching more troops, the Corvallis...
Or not... So
not,
let's just
not
wait.
No, let's not just wait. No, he didn't say he would bring the troops back.
He didn't say he wouldn't.
Yes, he did. He said, we are not going to withdraw from Afghanistan. You haven't been listening to the news reports.
Well, we'll see.
No, you don't have to see. Look back at the news for the last week. You can look back at Democracy Now! Or any of the other news stories. I can read it to you.
All right, well, I'll try to draw it up for you.
Well, you can wait all you want. I mean, you know, a lot of people want to wait for years and years while more and more people get killed. I, for one, will continue to wait in the sense that I'm not going to do shit except talk about it, which is what I do on the radio, I guess. But what do you think out there, folks? 427-3772. Give us a call. I'm reading a story again about Corvallis. Their new postcard campaign calls for the withdrawal of all U.S. troops. When asked if the protesters ever imagined that they would still be standing on the sidewalk 8 years later, Charlie Miller, a retired professor of oceanography at Oregon State University, said, no, we thought the war would eventually end. Added Epley, we didn't have an exit strategy, and we still don't. That's, again, a story about Corvallis, Oregon. In Santa Cruz, they used
to have a
weekly vigil every Sunday,
it's
I think
it was.
It's a
hard thing to keep something like that going. It's easy
ocean,
to start something like that, but
on
hard
ocean
to keep
and
it
Water
going.
Street, there used to be a vigil where that gas station was.
Right, right.
But it's not happening anymore. I mean, no, it's all the great liberals are just talking about, I don't know, the health program that this.
Well, hey, I'm As a homeless guy who could really use to see a doctor, I'm all in favor of that.
You're not going to get a health program that's worth a shit if all the money is going to Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm
okay,
sorry, man.
I agree. So let's we'll shut both those theaters down and spend it on health care. If that's your plan, I vote for it.
That's my plan.
All right, I vote for it. We have no argument. I think our argument is more philosophical.
Well, let's see,
especially
what
with regard to veterans. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's another one. But Ted Rao writes in his column, "Too illegit to quit." We can't make Afghans accept Karzai now. Karzai is a guy that held the phony election. Essentially, he's the U.S. puppet man over in Afghanistan. Los Angeles. 8 years we've been in Afghanistan, longer than any other war in American history. I don't think that's true.
No,
I think
the
U.S. was in Vietnam
right.
from,
yeah.
well, 1960.
All my childhood.
Actually, 1954, if you want to count Eisenhower's intervention.
What was the Gulf of Tonkin?
64. 64 to 75 was 11 years the U.S. was in Vietnam. So he's mistaken on that. But the party of the president who invaded Afghanistan has been repudiated at the polls. That's Bush. Yet we still haven't altered the flawed strategy. Flawed, I like that word, flawed. How about fucking imperialist murder strategy that essentially, instead of going after criminals who bombed the buildings in 9/11, bombs countries and invades countries and uses it as a pretext to establish and maintain military bases throughout the world. That's upsetting to me.
Yeah?
Yeah. Maybe it's
I don't think you're the only one.
I hope not, man.
No.
But sometimes I think it's people are not expressing their outrage if they feel it, that's for sure. Yet we still haven't altered the flawed strategy, according to this guy Ted Rao, that uneducated tribesmen with outdated weapons, it allows them to defeat us year after year. We haven't learned a thing. You can see the myopia in our countries and our leaders' talking points. Quote, "Our goal in Afghanistan is to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat al-Qaeda and its extremist allies," Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told ABC News Nightline. "But not every Taliban is al-Qaeda. There are people who are Taliban who are fighting because they get paid to fight. They have no other way of making a living." Again, this is Clinton still talking. "So few words, so much stupidity. Where to start? Here. Al-Qaeda's presence in Afghanistan in 2001 was negligible. Al-Qaeda was a Pakistani phenomenon. It still is. You're welcome. Have another. Not only is every Taliban not Al-Qaeda, there's no such thing as a Taliban, as in that guy is a Taliban. Members of the Taliban are called Talibs. You invade a country, send in 100,000 troops, presumed to decide what form of government it should have and who should rule it, yet you still don't know something as basic as what the members of the nation's majority political movement are called. Still wondering why they hate us? Last and not least, actually, while it's true that the neo-Taliban, as South Asian experts call them, sometimes pay stipends to their fighters, it's one hell of a stretch, not to mention reflective of an utter misunderstanding of the situation, to depict them as a bunch of greedy and or desperate entrepreneurs trying to scrape together a few Afghanis to make ends meet.
Yeah, I don't think they care much about the money. I'm sorry, I'd have to go along with that one.
Yeah, I think so too. Afghanis are the national currency. Afghans,
yeah, you can get a suitcase
are the people of Afghanistan.
$1.
I thought Afghans were dogs, but I guess they're both dogs and the people of Afghanistan. And that is no reflection on either dogs or the people.
It's the most worthless currency on the planet. So I'm just thinking they're probably not fighting for that. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't even, like, fight for it. So
they're probably fighting.
I'll do most anything.
Fighting because they're a bunch of foreigners rocking around with machine guns and dropping bombs
assume.
On them.
You know what I mean? I would assume.
The neo-Taliban are merely the most recent reflection of a historical truth. Afghans set their political differences aside when it's time to kill invaders.
Sure. Nothing, you think we would have learned from the Russians. I mean, come on, man.
Nothing the U.S. can do or will change what are a hostile occupation force. Nothing the U.S. can say will change why the Afghans think we're there to kill them and steal their land. 8 years. Look, we're never going to win. No one does empire like the British, but the Afghans beat them like a drum. Next-door neighbor Russia knew all about the Afghans and their culture. They
and tyranny. And tyranny. They were pros. I mean, you can say whatever you want about the American government. These guys, you know, let's face it, the USSR were pros at how to smash anything in their way. And they tried. They tried everything.
They tried.
There was occupy that country. Yeah. They learned the hard way that those people will hide in those craggy little mountains and
well,
keep
shooting
at
them forever. Well, the CIA was well-funded, and you know, Osama bin Laden was well-funded by the U.S.
Yeah, we gave them Stinger rockets. We had to go collect them back up afterwards when we invaded the second time. They were still laying around.
There was no way we were going to outperform the English and the Russians. Still, even if America's political class doesn't read history, you'd think they might catch a clue about crushing the hopes and aspirations of ornery brown people over the course of 8 years of occupation, at least by osmosis. Of said clues, number one, if you forget everything else, I tell you, remember this one clue goes as follows. Hamid Karzai, appointed as a U.S. puppet in 2001, has never been considered the legitimate president of Afghanistan by the people who count, Afghans. We've done a lot to piss off the Afghans, slaughtering wedding parties, dropping depleted uranium bombs on civilians, encouraging opium production. But the biggest single reason why every single American soldier who died in Afghanistan has died for nothing is that they died fighting for Hamid Karzai. Karzai's Afghanistan is a disaster. The average Afghan has received zero assistance from the U.S.-led coalition, has seen zero improvement in his or her life, and has seen no reconstruction whatsoever. Most Afghans have never seen American aid workers who never leave their compounds in Kabul. $13 billion has been allocated for aid to Afghanistan, but there is no evidence that a single cent has ever been spent. This is his claim. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is
I don't know. I go along with that. I have to agree with that only in the sense that I follow the news articles, and I don't see, you know, it seems like even in Iraq there was a lot more rebuilding of the infrastructure than I see nothing. I see no improvement. I mean, it seems like they're still living in hovels that were bombed out from the Russian times. I mean,
Anthony Kordsman of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the overall effort in Afghanistan has been a nightmare. Vast amounts have been wasted. The Afghan judiciary is so weak, reports the Times, that Afghans increasingly turn to a shadow Taliban court system because a senior military official said a lot of the rural people see the Taliban justice as at least something, which is how that Taliban came to power in 1995-96. Yep. There was chaos. They brought order. But President Obama doesn't understand a thing. Administration officials describe Mr. Obama as impatient with the civilian progress so far, reports the New York Times. The president is not satisfied on any of this, a senior administration official tells the paper. Mr. President, the Afghan war was lost the day the U.S. invaded. It was doomed to disaster the day it installed an illegitimate stooge. Not only is he is a puppet on a shoestring budget. So he can't try to buy the kind of public support that other Afghan politicians have earned with bravery on the battlefield. Now the U.S. is trying to retroactively legitimize the Afghan pseudo-president. But it's a sucker bet. Leaving even one U.S. soldier in Afghanistan means only one thing, more death. And that's by Ted Rawl, who's the author with Pablo G. Callejo of the upcoming graphic memoir, The Year of Loving Dangerously. And that's Ted Rawl on his website talking about Afghanistan.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, I'd agree with all of that. I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm so tired of banging my head against that because it doesn't seem like it matters what we say. They're going to invade who they want to invade, and they're going to do what they want to do. It seems like an implacable, you know, phenomenon. I mean, war after war after war. You know, Vietnam taught nothing to these bozos, and I'm not even convinced they're running the show. So, I don't know.
Americans arise.
You know, well, let's rise up. But who do we actually rise up against? Is it, you know, is Obama really in charge even? I mean, I don't know. Or is he just another Kennedy? When he goes too far, they're just going to
Well, it'd be nice if we saw him taking one step in the right direction. I'd like that. You know, instead of like removing troops from Iraq and Afghanistan
I read today, right in the New York Times, they're coming home. There's several thousand of them.
One brigade has been coming home, but not what he promised. And also, there's more in Iraq than there was a year
ago.
But
I'm sorry,
that's not all right. It's not all right.
We clarified
you
said none. And
it's
then now it's 4,000.
No, none have been removed none have been removed in terms of the total number of troops in Iraq. If you consider troops, support troops, and you know, the Blackwater type security guards, which there are 160, I don't know, between 100 and 200,000 security troops in Iraq, in addition to U.S. military. They're called Z. They're called XZ.
Really?
Well, those are claims by columnists that I've read.
Right.
So the point is
he is
full of shit. And the people, you know, people are saying, well, gosh, you know, let's give him a little more time.
Yeah.
I didn't want to discuss that. I mean, people want to, make those kinds of claims. The only response is, then you don't mind more people dying. And I don't mean the brave, valiant American soldiers dying, who are essentially mercenaries, who are doing it for the money to go over there, because nobody's invading us from Afghanistan. They're not dying for their country over there. They're serving political interests over there. They're doing it because they're a poverty draft.
I agree with that.
They're a poverty draft. So, you know, What are we going to do here? I don't have the answer to that. I've been, you know, flailing around for it. I guess I keep saying that it's such an obvious outrage that obviously the first thing to do is to descend, descend
CIA
on the office,
in the
descend on the office of Representative Farr, who's our U.S. congressional representative, who actually has an office in the county building. We did that 10 years ago with the war in Yugoslavia. I mean, and we were able to get a bombing pause. We finally got a bombing pause. Anyway, perhaps back to the street interviews.
Sure.
Because we're getting so many phone calls,
427-3772.
Yes, if you'd like to call in, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm in the studio with Mountain Man Chris, who's bearing with my strident rhetoric.
Oh, no. No, I mean, stridency is good. It's perhaps I'm not, you know, not making myself clear, I guess. I agree with that. You know, I agree with, you know, most all of that. I just don't know what to say. I mean, it's, you know.
And while you work on that, we're going to play some street interviews.
There we go.
So Officer Warren's claim, for instance, that I had a perfectly simple request. What's going on? You know. And he could have said, oh, I was just investigating a report of such and such. Which would have been informative, wouldn't have compromised anybody's privacy, and would have involved essentially a form of courtesy and public information also to a person who's with the media, which is what I am. However, instead of doing that, what Officer Warren did was he told me to go make a Public Records Act request, which of course is a way of saying telling me to fuck off. So, suggesting I then look bitter. I suppose I should have asked him why he looks so smug. I don't know. We have another update from...
Vicki Atkins.
And Vicki, you say you've just attempted to use the bathroom across Soquel Street parking garage bathrooms, and you saw a sign on those bathrooms that said...
They're open till midnight.
And however, is your experience?
My experience has been sometimes they're closed as early as 9, 10 o'clock at night.
That is my experience, too, because I'm occasionally down here as well.
Hi, James. And it's like, that's the only bathroom that'll...
You can't disqualify, you cannot not stipulate to a commissioner in an infraction, according to Commissioner Kim Basker. Now, she's not a...
What we're suddenly jumping into here is an interview with Attorney Doug Fox, who was previously a public defender, and I think he still does public defender work in the courthouse. Public defenders, or a public pretender, as some call them, are the people appointed by the court for those who are indigent in misdemeanor cases, and I guess sometimes in felony cases too, but not in infraction cases, the lowest level of crime. And you'll hear the discussion is about the issue of what's the way you get rid of a judge who you think is prejudiced. We have problems, for example, with the sleeping ban that we don't want. This is my view. You don't want Commissioner Kim Basket, the judge in the downstairs of the county courtroom, hearing your case because she's partial to police testimony, even though she's very nice to people. For example, the police officer doesn't show up, she'll create a continuance. If a defendant doesn't show up, she'll in essence find the defendant in essence guilty, even if the police officer, for example, hasn't shown up. So she's partial to the police, and There have been other indications of this, although her performance in some respects has been improving, and there will be a trial coming up in early November of Robert Facer and another individual, John, I believe his name is, I might have it wrong, who was ticketed for sitting on, a planter, a concrete lip of a planter near the New Leaf Market, which is a hot spot where police issue, I would say, probably dozens, if not hundreds, of tickets each month. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to make sure in case I had something.
No, Chris is making sure that his mic is hot.
I want to have a hot mic.
He's a hot kind of guy, and he likes a hot mic. So, anyway, this conversation you're hearing is between myself and public defender Doug Fox, who had, as you'll learn in the conversation, told me that not only you're allowed what's called a 170.6 disqualification of a judicial officer for no reason whatsoever except that you believe they're prejudiced. If you can show cause, you can disqualify other judges, but that's harder to do. But you are allowed to what's called ding one judge. Now, if you ding Commissioner Basket, which is where your ticket will normally go, you'll end up, unfortunately, often in the court of Ariadne Simons in Department 1. Ariadne Simons is a former head prosecutor in the DA's office here, who is, many of them are DAs.
You're scaring me.
Many judges are DAs. But this one is particularly, A, ignorant, two, seemingly determined to cause trouble for defendants who don't go along with her program. And I've talked about this in my own Metro case. She's charged us, she's required transcripts that have cost hundreds of dollars, which indigent defendants probably couldn't have afforded and would have even thought about getting. Maybe they would have gotten them free. I don't think so. I'm not sure what the reality is there. This has to do with my Metro trespass case. And I've also seen her behaving abusively in other respects. And in fact, Doug Fox, the individual we're going to be hearing from himself, has been outspoken around his concerns about this particular judge. He opposed her when she ran for office last year. And anyway, this is this conversation I'm having on the streets with public defender Doug Fox.
Yes, sir. She's a referee.
No, she's now a commissioner. That's what her little sign says. She used to be a referee. This is Doug Fox. This is Vicky.
Yes,
Vicky.
Yeah.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
You're on tape, so watch out.
Oh, always.
For free radio. So what is your experience, Doug? You're a public defender, have been for many years, and now you have your own law firm. But it is appropriate to be able to stipulate if you have a crime that you're being accused of, even if it's an infraction, not to get a...
Infractions carry consequences?
Of course they do.
They can carry points on your license, which can result in a suspension, which can result in towing your car, which can result in suspended license and
all kinds of
jail
nasty
time
things.
And all kinds of nasty things. So you would think that the Constitution, which says you have a right to be tried by a judicial officer, it's expressed right there that the California Constitution would allow you to choose to have a judge who has been appointed by the governor, vetted, and all the appropriate things, whereas a commissioner is an employee at will. And so that's what you're looking for in your judicial officer, is that neutrality that comes with it. We can have our disagreement about the concept of the neutral magistrate, but at least in theory, that's the correct idea.
In theory.
They get a warrant, they go to the neutral magistrate. You get a preliminary hearing, it's a neutral magistrate all the time, even if you can disagree about that. But so a commissioner is a person you're meant to agree to let hear your case, is how I like to see it. And so I don't think we should give up the idea that you can't...
And in fact, you've been successful in such a challenge. You didn't have to use what's called a 170.6.
That's correct.
You used another, which is refusal to stipulate to a
That's
commissioner.
Right. That's
the
right.
other one is a preemptive challenge that essentially disqualifies.
You do that against a regular Superior Court judge.
Right, or you could if you felt that was the only way. And in fact, that's what we've been told
but
for 20 years.
But we save
against
money
a commissioner
time.
Or referee.
It's totally appropriate to save money and time to not have judges hear traffic court cases. I understand that, and most people are fine pleading guilty or whatever in front of a referee and getting the same punishment, but I just think that there's a benefit to having a judicial officer.
Oh, I would, of course, agree with you. The question is, if they're not following that practice in Santa Cruz courts...
You have to take a writ to the 6th District, I'd say.
You have to play that about the bathroom?
Yeah, I will be playing that.
You have to take a writ. You'd have to go to the 6th District.
And you are the man to do it,
yeah.
Doug. But, Doug, you've actually been able to disqualify.
At $1 million an hour. Yeah.
Well, this man will pay your fee. You got $1 million.
Hey, bro, I don't. But are you the guy that's taking all my money?
I don't think so.
You know? Are you the guy that's taking...
And we're going to interrupt this briefly because we do have a caller. I'm going to put him up in just a moment. But what is being said here is we're trying to find a way not to stipulate to a commissioner, and at the same time, to have the ability to challenge the wrong judge. In essence, to say we don't want this Commissioner Basket, who usually does these traffic tickets, but we also don't want Ariadne Simons when she comes up. So in the one case, you don't stipulate to the commissioner. In the second case, you use your one challenge for the judge. And we've been told by the clerks that you can't do that in infraction cases, that is to say, only in a misdemeanor or a felony. And that's what that's all about for all of you technical people. But on the air with us is our caller. Hi there, caller. What's up?
I just had a comment about what was going on a few minutes ago. I have your show on a little bit of a delay. Tell you about the Afghanistan.
We were. I was reading an article on Afghanistan, and Chris and I were talking about it.
What's your name?
My name's John.
Hi, John.
San Jose.
Hey, all the way in San Jose, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And my comment is that I heard that one of the peace groups went over there to Afghanistan and did a little survey of the people to see if they wanted the United States to leave.
Right.
And they said 95% of the people said they did not want the United States to leave because they hadn't done anything yet. Was their reason.
Actually, you're probably referring to the Code Pink Medea Benjamin group that went over. I'm going to read something about that. As I understand it, they didn't survey the people. They surveyed women in government who are in the Karzai government. They did not survey the population. They did not leave Kabul. And in essence, they kind of upset a number of anti-war activists when they got back with their opinions, I guess, it would, because now they're talking about somehow the U.S. is being there as preserving rights for women, which is quite a stretch.
Well, they're not lopping their heads off in the stadiums anymore, though, like what they did when the Taliban were in. I mean, so there's something
to that. Lopping their heads off in the stadiums. I don't
know if you have... Kathy Kirk actually snuck in and took film of them beheading. She put it on television. I watched the special myself.
Again, I'd like to go back to what that is.
For adultery. They were executing women for adultery. That's the Taliban. So, I mean, how could you say it's not improved? A little bit, anyway. I mean, you know.
Well, I suppose in areas of foreign occupation, for example, under the Russians, under the Soviets, you had major improvement in terms of social services and in terms of sort of literacy stuff. But, of course, the Afghans didn't want Russians telling them what to do, and of course the U.S. wanted to engage in Cold War politics and supported a guerrilla war for 9 years. Anyway, I can look that up and try to give you my reaction to that, John. My immediate reaction is that it's, if you talk to women who are part of the government, who are being funded by the U.S., you're probably going to get a lot of, you know, favorable comments. And indeed, I think you're right, too. I think what Chris's point is that...
I'm not saying it's a stroke on the back of the military-industrial complex, but the Taliban,
again, makes the error of looking at a diverse number of groups, many of whom are
I'll specify then. I'm talking about the Taliban that was governing or attempting to govern in Afghanistan. They were recognized, by one nation, Pakistan, exchanged ambassadors.
Right, 1995, 96.
So, I mean, they were a government. And during that government, there were some, in my mind, some pretty horrible things.
As there were,
let's say,
in Saudi Arabia.
I'm not trying to compare notes. I'm just saying,
why not invade Saudi Arabia?
Because the question, the man gave us over this poll.
Yeah, okay.
It's understandable that certain segments of society.
I guess you might say that if we had invaded Saudi Arabia, should we keep our troops there? And this would be an interesting question because I don't like the Saudi Arabian
government.
We
need the oil. Why not? Why shouldn't we invade Saudi Arabia?
And why shouldn't we stay there once we're there?
Back to that question whenever you get a chance.
All right.
All right, man. Thanks for calling.
Provoking controversy again, John?
Oh,
all right, then. We'll leave that one for the moment. Because I'm left
We got pokers in the fire all over the place here, man.
I'll just have to continue with the street interviews. This, again, is Doug Fox, public defender.
This is actually a really interesting interview, and he brings up a lot of interesting points about how they managed to get you to, get convictions on a lot of these infractions by really fooling you. So I would pay attention. It's pretty good stuff, man.
My money.
What do you think?
It's a confrontation downtown between a man in glasses. Two men in sunglasses are confronting each other.
I will not take mine off, officer.
All right.
What do you do, dude?
I'm headed to the Logos, my favorite store in town.
I like it better than the bookshop Santa Cruz. I'm banned from the bookshop Santa Cruz, so I can't go in.
He shops in Palo Alto and wants us to shop local.
Well, he profits locally. Why shouldn't you shop locally?
We're talking about
the Coonerty.
I don't know of anything.
So, Doug, if you decide at some point you do want to challenge that, I'd be very interested because I think it impacts the cases of many poor people.
It would, but it would be a financial disaster for the lawyer. You would really need to find someone interested in pursuing that. What's your friend Kate up to? Because that's
trying to get her stop her house from being foreclosed on.
And I don't do appellate work anyway, so.
But
I like to fight it out, at the trial level before
you. Any kind words for Ariadne Simons, the latest judge of Department 1?
Oh, I would.
Yes?
Absolutely.
What do you have to say about our newest judge? I know she is our newest judge, but certainly he is a new judge. He's making, should we say, silent gestures, which indicate a certain amount of disapproval.
Hugginess.
But on the other hand, his words, this is a true attorney. He does one thing and he says another. I can appreciate that.
I'm on record already.
Have you been critical of Ariadne on record? Or?
Most, absolutely.
In fact, you probably opposed her election back last year.
I opposed her to be appointed to district attorney back in the year 2000.
And any comments on her record as DA that you think would not...
compromise your ability to defend your
court. She's an elected judge. She's an elected judge. You have to accept the fact that she's got the office that she has. You have to show it the respect and whatever the right word is,
Your Majesty, Your Grace, Your Worship.
Right. I mean, she's got the authority, and for that, she's got that position, and that position, people may disagree with Obama, but what we need is for people to be respectful toward him. So that's how I view her.
Throwing shoes at Obama might not be an appropriate response to his escalations abroad.
We'll see if he ever gets any shoes tossed at him.
Give me a pair and put him a few feet away. We'll see what happens, okay?
Well, good luck, Robert.
Thank you, Doug.
Good luck. Take it easy.
All right. Oh, I'd like to report. And I'd like to, an unfortunate occurrence here at the Alfredo's. Marilyn's window has been broken for a second time. Second time in how long, Marilyn?
This year.
That's Alfresco's. Alfredo's, I believe, is a form of how you prepare, I don't know, is it lasagna?
Noodles or something. Something to that extent.
My cooking skills are very limited.
Now, this lady has already gotten another one done. There's been a rash of these window breakings then, because they hit O'Neill's Surf Shop as well, man.
Talking about the front window of the kiosk, which is in front of New Leaf Market, which does a pretty tasty meal, I want to say, and also is one of the few businesses which actually has a little sign in the window, at least hopefully will continue to have a sign, that says this business does not discriminate. We support human rights for the homeless community, including the right to sleep at night, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. Marilyn, I'm sorry that this happened to you. I would like to make a $1 donation toward the window fund. What is that, 1/50th of how much the window costs? What does a broken window cost?
My recollection is about $250, but I remember. The tempered has to be coated, double pane, laminated, I think they cost.
All right, a $2 donation. You've got me.
I don't know.
That's not going to help, but nonetheless.
Thank you.
There you have it. Sad news down here in front of Alfresco's. Not as sad as somebody being raped, of course, but certainly not something to be pleased about.
Yeah.
Thanks. We're talking with Robert. And Robert, you say you last night when we heard the report of 9 squad cars rushing down Pacific Avenue to, I didn't see this, but I've heard this from several people, a large number of squad cars. You said you were present sort of when these squad cars gathered?
Yeah, at Trader Joe's.
About what time of night was it?
Probably around 10.
And you were present too?
Yeah.
And what did you guys see?
I didn't see anything. We were actually just walking by.
The cops were frantically just like going, looked like they had a mission they were on. That's all I know.
Nobody knew what it was all about.
I heard someone got raped, like some 69-year-old got raped last night, but that's just what I heard.
A paper from four days ago.
Okay.
Somebody on the Clearview Court had their home invaded and they were raped.
But like the whole thing was we never stepped foot in the parking lot. We were just walking by. And we got swarmed, guns pulled on us, told to get face down, put our hands up, and all that, and we just were walking by.
And who were the police officers who did this, you know?
If I saw him, I'd know him.
And how many officers did you see involved in this?
There was 9 cops right there on us, and we did nothing. And they brought the victim, but I guess something happened. There was an assault, and somebody pulled a knife, and I'm not sure. And they thought it was us, but we never did anything.
And how many of you were there?
There was only 3 of us walking.
And was this victim a man or a woman?
It was a man. He was in the back of the police car, and he saw us. They tried to identify us, you know how they do that. They brought the victim up, and he said it wasn't us, and they're like, okay, sorry. And let us go.
And you say were there 9 police officers or 9 squad cars?
There was 9 squad cars, but then we counted 9 police officers around us that actually pulled guns on us and made us get face down in the dirt.
Were you intoxicated in any way resisting the... Did they ask you to stop and did you agree to? Or did they ask you to stop and you declined?
No, we were just walking and they ran up, pulled their guns on us and told us face first on the ground.
I see. Well, it's probably your caps and those sunglasses. I mean, they're pretty serious matter here, not to mention...
Raven.
Look at those tennis shoes. Show a little respect for our police, will you?
Yeah, right.
All right, then. We've been talking with
Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
All right, well, it's around 10 to 5 down at Pacific Avenue at Cathcart and Pacific on Friday afternoon. Is it the 16th or the 15th? I'm not sure which. It's one of the two. 16th of October. And we're talking with Forky Ravioli. And Forky, you say that there's a new move afoot to get rid of disreputables like yourself at the tannery.
Actually, there's a move among the tenants to get rid of the disreputable management company, the John Stewart Company.
I've heard about that John Stewart Company. Tell us a little more about this group.
Well, they seem to be really good at talking out of both sides of their mouth. They don't keep their promises. They've mismanaged. And they're starting to evict people over their mistakes.
So, for example,
their clerical errors.
So you yourself are facing this situation?
Yes, I'm being evicted over a clerical error.
And what was the nature of the error?
They quoted one rent price, and we paid it. And then they sent a 3-day notice because the amount was wrong, even though that was the amount they told us to pay.
Did they tell you in writing?
No.
So you're stuck without documentation that they actually gave that amount.
Right. It was a verbal.
But you can trust John Stewart.
Yeah, sure. I don't know which side of the mouth we're talking out of.
How long have you been living there?
6 months.
And how many people live there at the tannery?
I think it's about 175, 200 artists.
Are people in any way united in their concerns about the management company? Are you simply a malcontent?
No, I think it's I'm part of a movement at this point.
And so, in fact, perhaps you can argue retaliatory eviction, eh?
Well, we'll see about that.
Because I know John Stewart Company has also been accused in other management situations of oppressive rules and policies.
Oh, yes, it's governance by fear.
Give me some instances of why you say this.
They have rent violations.
And we turn the tape over here.
All right, Robert.
And again, a call-in number for those who are phone-friendly are 427-3772.
About these bogus lease violations and then evict people over them. You know, it's governance by fear, you know.
And we'll talk to you more. Is there an organization that's formed? If people are having problems with John Stewart, is there an individual they can reach? What is there a website? Any suggestions there?
There's a magazine called Poor Magazine that has been documenting John Stewart abuses. Google John Stewart Company complaints. And you'll get an eyeful.
How about John Stewart Company complaints, Santa Cruz?
Yeah, there's some there.
We've been talking with
Forky Ravioli.
Thank you, Forky.
Fork you.
Thank you. We're talking with infamous cat lover. Your name's here.
I'm Tom Wolf.
And Tom, you're here with your questionable Pudi, who's living the life of Riley, and you have for cat lovers.
This is the cat man. You may have seen him on Pacific Avenue. He kind of wheels around backwards on Pacific Avenue.
He's fantastic.
With his putty tat.
I couldn't imagine he'd give you an interview. I can't wait to hear what he's got to say. That's awesome. He's an amazing guy. He's really funny.
And someone has added a bumper sticker or a wheelchair sticker.
Sold it to me. He wanted a
girl's kick ass. So what's happening downtown? Have you any reports from the street?
It's kind of fucking dead, man. Everybody fucking is off doing whatever they're doing and not hanging out no more for a while. I don't know. It's harvest, man. Maybe they're up doing business, man. Maybe they're
marijuana-wise.
Living that bud. That's why they're not around. They're not even around at the drum circle. I was at the drum circle, man. It was dead.
Kind of quiet this Wednesday.
Yeah, real quiet. A lot of the drummers didn't even show up. So I guess everybody's busy.
Well, remember, there was a rain the day before.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop them. You know, I think everybody's just up trimming buzzes or some shit. I don't mess with all that stuff, so that's why I'm here.
I'm going to leave you and your putty. You take care.
All right.
So we're downtown at 10:30 on Friday evening, the 16th of October, in front of the closing up Del Marette, or Del Mar Cafe, or Del Maria, and we have a group of folks gathering here. A sign on the sidewalk says, "Too ugly to prostitute, too stupid to steal."
What are you going to do?
But, so whose sign is this?
It's mine.
And have you been successful? Free Radio wants to know.
Very.
How are you doing today? How many hours have you been working at this?
I work here like, I stand here like for 3 hours.
How do you do? How much money do you make an hour, would you say?
I make like 200.
Next time I get to a computer.
Really?
Yeah.
And how many days have you been out here?
Huh?
How many days?
I've been here for 2 days. People are so kind here.
Where are you from?
I'm from Hollywood.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
What is your name?
You're so kind. And you're sexy.
Oh, thanks. Where's my hug?
Huh?
Where's my hug?
I can give you my email. I think that's how it works.
And what about the police? How are they treating you?
They're very kind, actually. They're never down the street. I just seen one cop all night.
So no hassles.
No.
How about the man of Santa Cruz? How are they treating you?
Wait, what radio am I going on?
Okay. Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Emails.
Please.
B-A-D.
Wait, what did you ask me? I forgot.
How are the men treating you?
They're so kind. I go to, like, parties every night.
And I see you have a balloon in your hand.
Yes, it's my balloon crown. Actually, I had my tarot card. Is that how you say it? Tarot cards? Okay. Yeah, some guy read my tarot cards, and he said that my past was... Hey, hold on. I forgot. Hey, what's my past like?
I'm trying
fucking
to...
Fucking slut. Okay. You know what? I forgot my past. Actually, I forgot. But the present, I remember that. He said that I'm a dictator and that I have slaves and that people listen to me and I get what I want. He said that's what my present is. And he said my future... I'm going to have conflicts with, like, in the working force or something. And
how long have you been
really
up? How long have you been up from Hollywood?
2 days.
And
three, actually.
Have you been to Santa Cruz before, or is this your first time?
No, I've been here once, actually.
And does it seem, how does it seem, how does it compare with Hollywood?
It's more chill here.
So, for example, have you tried this sign in Hollywood?
They like it.
Have you tried it?
Huh? No, not in Hollywood.
We want a full report when you do.
Okay.
We've been talking with?
Selena.
Thank you, Selena. We're talking to...
I'm a regular contributor, Mikey Bratt.
Indeed. And Mike, you say that you actually have 5 outstanding warrants for you. Before you go off and get intoxicated, give me the... He's already intoxicated. Before you get more intoxicated, well, I think it's too late. We'll talk to you again. So, Mikey down here has 5 warrants, he tells me. But whoa, sorry about that.
Hello.
And the warrants are such things as obstructing the sidewalk, trespass, playing amplified music, standard stuff, which, of course, doesn't really justify citations in the first place, usually, although it has to know the specific circumstances. And again tonight, as last night, we have a large crowd of folks. It seems somewhat tanked up. We're talking 10, 20, maybe 30 folks in different clusters hanging out. Boozing it up.
And this is in front of New Leaf Market, and I believe we're talking last Friday or Saturday night.
Getting drunk and probably preparing for another sweep and crackdown here, lamentably. Or not preparing, as the case may be. And I'm out here on a Saturday morning, about 25 to 12, in front of the Village Yoga. We have 2 police officers writing citations on the sidewalk here. Officer Warren and Officer Wilson giving these two a citation. What are you charged with?
Staying within 14 feet of a building.
Yeah.
Really?
Actually, no, it's not the building, it's the rails.
2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Now, let's see here. I'm going to count out from the railing of the aqua blue, which is empty. 1, 3, 4, 5, 10 squares plus slightly more. I think you can make a case in court for that. Get a tape measure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I told them to do that. I told them to get a tape measure.
Why are you here if you told them to do that? Have you measured it yourself?
And the person I'm asking that question of is Officer Warren, who is wasting our time and money with these kinds of citations. People are essentially innocently sitting on the sidewalk.
Oh, and the kids, obviously, it's similar to the ones he gave me when I first got in, less than a foot or two off. I mean, even if he is off, and I could tell from the conversation, he's probably 24 inches off. from the measurement.
Less.
Less.
I mean, all he has to do is move over a foot, and the officer can resolve the issue by saying, move over a foot.
Yeah, and this is my problem with all this. I mean, the whole idea of the police force is to try to gain compliance to some of these small infractions. These infractions are not supposed to exist as a way to gin tickets or cause this sort of harassment. They're supposed to, you know, if he'd have said, just move, and the kid instantly slid back a foot, then the whole issue is resolved, and the kid's in compliance, and everybody's happy.
I wouldn't say that, but I would say...
The
existence of these laws presses everyone into tiny spaces and are designed specifically to be selectively enforced.
Exactly.
And also to eliminate most places where people can sit comfortably downtown unless they pay money.
Exactly.
That makes them class laws, but I agree with you that obviously
a few inches. It's always just a. It's always
there's an extra layer being added on here, and that layer is not just are the laws horrible and designed to criminalize people, but we are going to use the existence of these laws that people don't know about. Instead of getting people to comply with these absurd laws, we're going to use these laws as a way of punishing people and making Santa Cruz an inhospitable place for them.
Exactly, exactly.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Chris and Robert. Who are you?
I am George in Santa Barbara, California.
Uh-oh. Wow. Well, hi, George. How's it going?
Long way away. A lot of people on the web tonight. Hi, George.
I'm the guy that called up to check the number because I didn't have the area code since you guys don't mention it.
Oh, Robert, that came back to bite you, didn't it?
831, everybody.
Anyway, a little moment of levity. What do you get when you cross a penis and a potato?
I don't know.
A dictator.
Very good. You guys are both.
I like that one. That's a good one. Thank you, George.
A little bit of a comment. You guys give the dominant paradigm a leg to stand on when you argue so much, being essentially on the same side.
Well, we love each other. I mean, the bottom line is me and Robert go back a little bit, and to me, he's a hero, so it's actually kind of hard to give him a hard time. It really is for me. From a personal standpoint, this is a guy who's been banging his head against this wall for a long time, man, on behalf of these people.
Well, I love the divergent views, and thank you. Keep it up, because it's really...
Well, we're gonna get married if they ever pass the undue proposition, whatever it was.
Hey, man, we don't need no stinking churches to get married up
there. There we go.
Really?
Or even laws. George, what's happening in Santa Barbara?
Radio Free Santa Barbara. We don't have anything like it.
Well, get yourself a brick, man.
Still wrapped up in Reagan.
Are you houseless yourself, or are you indoors?
Actually, no. I went through all the programs, and I'm now a recipient of some Section 8 bullshit.
Wow.
And
I bet that was fun to go through.
Oh, well, it's great, yeah. Basically, through August and September, we had five inspections, and these inspections are made to force people to comply to some cleanliness rules and this. And this is the showcase piece here to house the homeless. Oh, yes. And you're going to get a bunch of people who've been living on the streets for God knows how many years, and you're going to stuff them in these little teeny boxes and tell them to keep them clutter-free and absolutely clean.
You have a point.
Well, you have to give people a little leeway on being themselves, you know.
Wow, so that's how they're handling it down there, huh?
So they have only the homeless that can comply. And that, again,
are you complying? Are you keeping your space clutter-free and clean?
Yes, basically I had to do a bunch of jumping through hoops, but, you know, I'm still able to do that.
Right on.
I basically lived in a school bus for 21 years. A boat for 8 years, so I've been out of the loop for a long time.
Now, do you hang out on the streets a lot down there in Santa Barbara?
Actually, no, because that's a place to get in trouble. And getting in trouble in Santa Barbara, you don't want to go to jail here.
Well, I was just wondering what the cops were. Yeah, exactly. How the cops are relating with the impoverished.
Forget the cops. They let the gangs rule, and the gangs rule in the jail.
Wow.
So George,
I'm
are you
a little older, and I don't need any George, of that stuff.
George, were you around for the the People's Santa Barbara Homeless People's Association and the Homeless Coalition when they were doing protests in the 80s and 90s?
No, actually, I wasn't. I was busy sailing around and doing various things underwater and sort of staying away from things.
Because I know that enough said Nancy McCready and Beaming Bob Hansen are activists down there who fight the sleeping ban. Peter Maron is...
They have a sleeping ban in Santa Barbara as well?
Mm-hmm. Most of the cities.
They've cleaned up town amazingly, of course.
When you say cleaned up town, what you mean is they got rid of the poor people, those unsightly homeless people.
At the expense of people who have very few resources.
Right.
Well, I understand.
They have homeless shelters, but you've got to be clean and sober to be in the shelter and various other things.
So basically, if you're homeless, you're not welcome in Santa Barbara.
All right. Well, listen, thank you for calling, George.
Peace.
And we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Call-in number on the air is 831-427-3772. If you want to reach me off air, and that's going to be happening in about 10 minutes, you can leave a message for me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, 831 is the area code, 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F.
Oh, we're not, I think you folks here at Free Radio Santa Cruz have a problem wrapping your mind around the fact that people are listening from all over the world and all over the country. That stream goes out on the internet, freakradio.org, and it's where you can pick it up and tell your friends. For those of you who did listen tonight streaming, as an old DJ on internet radio, I want to thank you for tuning in on the web, and thanks for calling in, too. To do that and let all your friends know. The more support we can get out there, send it out to everybody who's in your email address. Tell them to tune in and listen. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. I'm going to read another article before we go, just to keep my international credentials up with Teresa and others. Hey, Teresa. And I will be back on Sunday, probably, with Keith McHenry, who's a Food Not Bombs co-founder, assuming he calls in. This time he's promised he will. I'm supposed to call him in advance. And make sure he does. And also, I'm going to have a mystery guest, a street activist who's been around at different times and places. And he was arrested with me with Food Not Bombs up in San Francisco about 15 years ago when we were challenging the Jordan regime up then when Jordan was mayor in San Francisco. So don't forget to tune in 9:30 to 1 on Sunday mornings. Let me give you, though, a little from this interesting article called... What is it called? It's by Tom Engelhart and Joe Comerford, and it's called Three Cheers for the War Dividend. If you want a picture of how Washington deals with American war-making today, check out a moment from NBC's Meet the Press. David Gregory, is conducting a roundtable discussion with the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Richard Myers, Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator Carl Levin, that's our... just not our vice president... President or Vice President?
No, Slapping Joe Biden. Come on. Joking Joe.
I don't know. Is that right who it is?
Joking Joe Biden.
And retired General Barry McCaffrey, one of those generals who now spends his time on television explaining our wars to us. At one point, Gregory asks, can we beat the Taliban? General McCaffrey's reply starts this way. Well, I think in 10 years of $5 billion a month and with a significant front-end security component, we can leave an Afghan national army and police force and a viable government and roads and universities. But it's a time constraint that we can't change things in 18 to 24 months. So I think we've got to lower expectations. Now, if you were a normal citizen, you might begin frantically calculating $5 billion a month, 12 months a year, $60 billion a year, times 10 years, $600 billion. If, in fact, the number of U.S. troops of trainers or advisors rises significantly and the U.S. commitment to the war rises as well, this will surely prove a gross underestimate. But leaving that aside, you, the normal, reasonable human being, might at this point say something like, hold on, General, $600 billion more dollars, 10 years, and where's that money coming from? And is that really how you want to... Uncle Dennis...
They just print it. They just print it, Uncle Dennis.
Dollars and another supposedly too big to fail bailout. Or, of course, you might jump up and yell, have you lost your senses? But, of course, this is Washington, where such numbers for Americans fighting, war fighting are so ho-hum, so run-of-the-mill, that none of the other participants even thinks to comment on or question them or stops for a second to wonder. In fact, when McCaffrey is done, here's how Gregory begins his response. Just with very little time left, I want to get to two other issues. The president spoke last night at the Human Rights Campaign dinner and spoke about don't ask, don't tell, and so it goes on in wartime Washington. Cashing in the war dividend. So you thought the Pentagon was already big enough? Well, what do you know, especially with the price of the American military slated to grow by at least 25% over the next decade? Forget about the butter, it's bad for you anyway, and sheer military power, as well as the money behind it, assures the country of a thick waistline without the cholesterol. So let's sing the praises of perpetual war. We better, since right now every forecast in sight tells us that it's our future. The tired peace dividend tugboat left the harbor 2 decades ago, dragging with it laughable hopes for universal health care and decent public education. Now the mighty USS war dividend is preparing to set sail. The economic weather reports may be lousy and the seas choppy, but one thing is guaranteed. That won't stop it. The United States, of course, long ago captured first prize in the global arms race. It now spends as much as the next 14 countries combined, even as the spending of our rogue enemies and former enemies, Cuba, Iran, Libya, North Korea, Sudan, and Syria, much in the headlines for their prospective armaments, make up a mere 1% of the world's military budget. Still, when you're a military superpower focused on big picture thinking, there's no time to dawdle on the details. And be reasonable. Who would expect the U.S. to fight 2 wars and maintain more than 700 bases around the world for less than the $704 billion we'll shell out to the Pentagon in 2010? But here's what few Americans grasp, and you aren't going to read about in your local paper either. According to Department of Defense projections, the baseline military budget, just the bare bones, not those billions in warfighting extras, is projected to increase by 2.5% each year for the next 10 years. In other words, in the next decade, the basic Pentagon budget will grow by at least $133.1 billion, or 25%. When it comes to the health of the war dividend in economically bad times, if that's not good news, what is? As anyone at the Pentagon will be quick to tell you, it's a real bargain, a steal, at least compared to the two-term presidency of George W. Bush. Then the same baseline defense budget grew by an astonishing 38%. If the message isn't already clear enough, let me summarize. It's time for the Departments of Housing and Urban Development, Transportation, Health and Human Services, Labor, Education and Veterans Affairs to suck it up. After all, Americans, however unemployed, foreclosed, or unmedicated, will only be truly secure if the Pentagon is excessively well-fed. According to the Office of Management and Budget, what that actually means is this. 55% of next year's discretionary spending, that is, the spending negotiated by the President and Congress, will go to the military, just to keep it chugging along. The 14 million American children in poverty, the millions of citizens who will remain without health insurance, even if some version of the Baucus plan is passed, the 7.6 million people who have lost jobs since 2007, all of them will have to take a number. And there's more to read here, but I see my... time is nearing a close. I have 2.5 minutes left before
I'm holding my number.
Go ahead, Christopher. You got
no, I'm
number.
Holding my number.
Oh,
you said take a number.
You took your number.
Yeah, I took my number for
and
the health care and the
this
job.
This is an interesting story, which I will recommend you look at. It's, again, called the Hurrah, Three Cheers for the War Dividend, and you can Google for it. I am going to segue you now into the next show, which is a musical phantasmagoria from the cream to the dregs. Actually, it's more like...
Well,
actually, if
it was a segue, Robert...
It's Uncle Dennis talking from the back. But in fact, it's actually an accurately termed show. From the cream of my show to... Well, need I go any further? I want to thank you...
What is he saying, Uncle Dennis?
I don't know.
Get him on the mic so he can defend himself
no,
here.
No, Uncle Dennis needs no defense, or perhaps he has no defense. It's not clear. But in any case, I see...
Well, Robert,
he's already
the only cream on your show.
We're getting some rather crass references here. I thought we had ended
three old
this.
Veterans in the studio
this
tearing
sound
it
like
up.
Diversity to me, or it sounds like diversity. Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I encourage you to give me a call off air.
Read a PSA.
I haven't
Hold
really
on.
Got time, but you can read it at the beginning of your show if you'd like.
No,
you
we got to here. I'll read it. I'll read it.
Chris is going to read a PSA, but before you do, I just want to. I'll sign off as Chris reads you the the dentist
as
initiated.
I do it, like you're going to do it in like the background.
I'm going to. I'll be.
You can't
I'll
roll
be
credits.
Humming,
it's
I'll be
not
humming
television.
Patriotic chanties.
All right,
all
right. The sixth annual bailathon. I'm sorry, sixth annual bailathon for healthcare in Nicaragua. Put on your dancing shoes to raise some funds and have some fun. On Saturday, November 14th, the 6th Annual Bailathon, a 10-hour dance marathon at the 418 Project in downtown Santa Cruz. We'll raise money for a health clinic in Nicaragua. Now, that sounds like a good cause. Now is the time to sign up and start gathering pledges from your sponsors. For information, please call 831-768-7004. So if you want to get involved with a bailathon to build a clinic in Nicaragua, once again, call
831-768-7004.
Great, Chris. And that... We've even got it recorded.
Well, Uncle Dennis, you of all people ought to know I'm an old veteran.
And we'll allow these two old soldiers to reminisce.
No, I'm out of here, too.
I'm not a soldier. I was a sailor.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you are.
This was the soldiers and sailors against the war.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, that's good. That's good. I like that. I like that. Against the war. Yeah, I know what he said.
Al Gore.
Oh, boy. I don't think Al Gore is doing much these days.
Not much that's very constructive, no.
Times have changed for poor Al Gore. Anyway, it's now your show, Dennis, and thanks again, everybody, for being with me. Call the Huff Line, 423-HUFF, if you want to be huffed and puffed.
See you again soon,
Come
Santa Cruz.
For Keith McHenry at 9:30 on Sunday morning.
We'll be right back. Oh Lord, I popped a lot of pills. But I've never touched nothing that my spirit could kill. You know I've seen a lot of people walking around with tombstones in their eyes. But the butcher don't care. Oh, if you live or if you die. God damn the pusher.
And here we got a little bit of Steppenwolf for you. From the cream to the dregs, Uncle Dennis here in the squeaky chair, taking over from Robert, who will be back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning or thereabouts to inform you more about what's going on in the homeless situation in Santa Cruz. But here on From the Cream to the Dregs, it's music. Until about 11 o'clock, of course. Coming up shortly, we're going to have the Brew of the Week. But as part of the Brew of the Week, we're going to run down California brewers and how they fared at the Great American Beer Festival. So, and we've got a gold medal winner in the studio, so we'll check that out. Of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update. And a whole lot more. 10 o'clock, we'll have the Spotlight Group of the Week, an entire album by one group or artist for your listening pleasure. So stay tuned for all of that right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, and we're at www.freakradio.org. And do remember that Free Radio needs your donations. So, and we have a new post office box, so we'll get all of that information to you in the next little while. Stay tuned. Here's some cream.